Parsha Shmini, double header, and it's also Parshas Parah. It's very significant that it's very unique that we have in a year where Parshas Parah falls out in Parshas Shmini, because we all are well aware that the purpose of the Parah Adumah, the primary purpose of the Parah Adumah, is a kapara for Klal Yisrael, for the Chet HaEgel. Chazal tell us the reason why the Parah Adumah is an Egel. Zois Chukas HaTorah Shatziva Hashem Leimar. You shall take yourself an. A Parah, because the Parah is the mother of an Egel. When Klal Yisrael worship the Egel, they fashioned specifically an Egel, a creature, an animal which is the child of a Parah. And Rashi gives the mashal that if a child soils the palace, a child soils the room, so you call for the mother, let the mother come and clean up after her child. Klal Yisrael sinned by offering, by creating an Egel Hazav, so therefore the appropriate kapara should be that a parah should come and serve as a means of atonement for this sin. And this is what the major theme of Parah Adumah is about. And Parah Adumah, we read before Chodesh Nisan, that we should come to Chodesh Nisan in a state of Tahara. The major theme, one of the major themes that reappears over and over in Parashah Shmini, is also Kapara for Parah Adumah. That's the opening part of the pasuk. Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer El Aaron, Kach Lecha Egel, Ben Bokor Lichatos, Va'ayil Yolot Tvimim V'Akilufnei Hashem, V'Yol B'nei Yisrael Tadaber Limar Kichu Sirizim Lichatos Ve'Egel V'Cheves B'nei Shana Tvimim L'Yolot. Both Aaron and Klal Yisrael were required to bring an Egel. And Rashi on the spot says, Why Kachal Cho Egel L'Hoidia Shemechaper Loi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Yidei Egel Ze Al Maisei Cho Egel She'osa. Okay, so we have over here an Egel being brought as a carbon in Parshas Shmini, and we have a Parah being brought in Parshas Sukkot for Parah Adumah. I just don't need big chidushim, but it's just unique that we are zoiche this Shabbos to read the two ends of the ultimate kapara for Parah Adumah. There's a kapara of bringing an Egel, a kapara that was brought by Aaron, kach lecha Egel, an Egel that was brought by Klal Yisrael, an exact replica, exact same object for which they brought the Egel Hazav instead of gold. Here it was an animal as a kapara. And then in Parashas Chukas, we have the Parah, the mother of the Egel, which Chazal tell us also serves as a kapara for all generations for the chait of the Parah Adumah. The only point I want to make is the difference of focus. The focus of Parashas Shmini, when we're mechaper for the chait of the Parah, for the Egel, is at the moment of the inauguration, the beginning of the Chanukas HaMishkan. Bayom HaShmini, the eighth day of the Miluim, was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. In the very beginning, there was a need for there to be a kapara. Parashas Chukas, Parah Adumah, the kapara is for all generations. All generations, when a person wants to come to do a service in the Beis HaMikdash, you want to come to a state of kapara tahara, you have to be mitahir yourself, you have to be pure. So we have really the full spectrum. It's unique, this Shabbos, we are presented with an opportunity of atonement with the fullness of the full spectrum possible. From the beginning, Yom HaShmini, the Haschola, all the way to what's going to be throughout all the generations of the Parah Adumah, which was something that was prepared and put away to be used for all future generations. The Chazal tell us only 9 Paros were created so far. Ultimately, there will be a 10th Parah Adumah. The fact that there are 10 represents Kapara for all generations. Here is Kapara at the very first moment of time. Here it's an Egel, there it's a Parah. It represents the full spectrum. They're coming together here on one Shabbos to remind us that Kapara, atonement, is within our reach to bring Mashiach. Okay, now, I have here just a Ha'ara. The Ha'ara is probably total nonsense, but I anyway want to tell it to you because I find it to be interesting. Rashi opens up the Parsha with 3 numbers. Parsha begins, Vayihi Bayoim HaShmini, Shmini Lemiluim. It was the 8th day of the Miluim, the 23rd day of Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu, he put up the Mishkan and then took it down. The second day he put it up again and took it down. He did this for 7 days. Each one of the days he took down the Mishkan. Finally, on the eighth day, they put it up and they did not take it down. That was the day when Aaron entered and did the Avodah. It was the first day of Nisan. It was the beginning of the Seder of the Mishkan for the 40 years in the desert. So he was Shmini Limiluim. Who? And who? What else is it? Who? Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It's the first. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the first of the first. It's the first day of the year. What else is it? Shukam Mishkan. Bo Bayom. And on that day, Shehugam Mishkan Bo Bayom. V'Natal Eser Ataros. And this day took 10 crowns. The Medrash elaborates that 10 very great things happened on this day. This was the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was waiting for from the time of creation to make for himself a dira batach toinim, a place to rest the Shechin on this world. And this day was crowned, was set, the Natal Eser Ataros Hashenuyos Beseder Olam. So Rashi opens up this parsha with three numbers: 8, 1, and 10. What is 8, 1, and 10 total? It totals 19. 19 is a very significant number in Yados. 19 is the number of years which the sun and the moon need to realign. Every person is born on a day, every 19th year from the day of his birthday, his English birthday and his Hebrew birthday will be exactly the same. Every 19, there's a 19, what? It's a leap year.
No, most of the time.
19 years generally is the time when the sun and the moon are realigned. Now this theme is a central theme in Parsha Shemini. Parsha Shemini, when they offered the Korbanos, it was Rosh Chodesh, but they also offered the Sohir Shel Rosh Chodesh. There were three Seirim that were offered on this day. The Sohir of Rosh Chodesh, the Sohir of Nachshon. Nachshon ben Aminadav, he offered a special carbon, the Chanukas of the Nesiim, and it was the Sohir of the Miluim, a special Sohir for the day, the special carbonos that had to be offered by Bnei Yisrael, part of the atonement for part of the inauguration of the Mishkan. So there were three Seirim. From the three Seirim, as they offered the three Seirim, a terrible tragedy occurred, that Nadav v'Avihu died. And the remaining Kohanim that were doing the Avodah was Aaron, Elazar, v'Isamar, and they ate from the meat of the Sohir of the Miluim, and they ate from the Sohir of Nachshon, but they did not eat from the meat of the Sohir of Rosh Chodesh. And Moshe Rabbeinu was upset. Moshe Rabbeinu was disturbed. It's Seir HaChatos Dorosh Darash Moshe Vihine Soiroth. And in fact, these two words are the middle of the Torah, Dorosh Darash Moshe. So the question is, why was Moshe Rabbeinu, what was he so disturbed that this, first of all, why was it indeed so that this two other Seirim were consumed by the children of Aaron, and the Sohir of Rosh Chodesh Nisan was burnt? So the answer was given. They told Moshe Rabbeinu that the Sohir of Nachshon ben Aminadav was a once in a lifetime opportunity, and the Sohir of the Chanukas Ha Mishkan was once in a lifetime, once in history. So they're called Kodshei Shah, holy things for the time. Since these things only happen once in the history of the world, there's a special dispensation that it can be eaten, even if the Kohanim are in a state of mourning. But the Sohir of Rosh Chodesh, which will be offered forever and ever after this month, Rosh Chodesh Iyar will do it again, Rosh Chodesh Sivan will do it again, so it's called Kodshei Doros, there is no special dispensation, even though we are allowed to offer it in a state of Aminus, but we are not allowed to eat from the meat. There's a difference between Kodshei Shah and Kodshei Doros. Now, Mefarshim explains something very, very deep. Moshe was still upset. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu still upset? We know that when we recite the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh, Roshei Chodoshim li'amcha nosota, Zman kapara l'chol tol doysam. Mefarshim tell us that there's a very mystical, deep concept in what it means of Zman kapara. Who is the kapara for? So the kapara kaviyachal, again, I don't want to say anything that is borders not because it's chas v'shalom, but I'm just telling what it says in Chazal, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu said, bring this carbon for me. How could it possibly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires a carbon? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate of perfection. Hatsur tamim pa'alo kichol derach of mishpat. Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't understand what this means, but when he created the world, it was originally that the moon and the sun were exactly the same size. The moon and the sun were both the shnei hama'oros ha'gedoylim. And the moon complained to Hashem, how could it be that shnei melachim mishamshim bekeser echot? How could it be that two kings are going to have the same crown? Hashem said to the moon, you are correct. You have no choice but to humble yourself. I demand of you that you shall diminish yourself, make yourself smaller than the sun. The moon said to Hashem, is it fair? Because I'm the one that complained. I brought to your attention this impossibility of Shnei Melachim Meshamesh and Mekeser Echad. I have to be the one that's going to suffer. So Hashem says, you're making this a good question. So I'll make it up to you. I will create the stars. All of the stars in heaven are here to appease you. They will serve as your companions. This will be a pious for what I have done to you. The moon said, I'm sorry, I accept the gift, but I'm still not satisfied. So Hashem said, listen, don't feel bad. There will be a day, a nation called Klal Yisrael, and they will observe the calendar based upon the moon. The Umos Olam will have a calendar based upon the sun. This shall serve for you as an appeasement for diminishing yourself. The moon said, I'm still not satisfied. So Hashem said, you're right, there's nothing I can do to satisfy you. Now again, I don't want to say Abikurus, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I have made a mistake. Chotosi. Now that's not to be taken literally, of course. It means that built into the creation of this world, there has to be Hester upon him. There has to be things that we do not all understand, even you, the moon, who are privy to creation. There are things that are built into the world that you do not understand, and I have to create a world like this, and therefore Klal Yisrael, bring for me a carbon of atonement. Be mechaper for my sin, whatever that means, by bringing a carbon on every Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodoshim li'amcha nasata, zman kapara l'chol toldoisa. Now kapara, we learned last week, is that kapara is only fully achieved when the kohanim eat the meat of a carbon chatos. V'ochlu oisam asher kupar bohem. When a kohen eats from the meat of a carbon, or where the owner of the carbon eats from the meat of the carbon, then the owner achieves full kapara. If you bring a carbon and the carbon is offered but the kohanim do not eat, there is something lacking in the kapara. That's one principle. There's another principle of simanim milsa. We all know that on Rosh Hashanah we're obsessed with simanim. The first night of Rosh Hashanah we have on the table all different types of foods. All different types of foods which we are hoping that they will serve as a good omen for the coming year. It's very critical that what happens in the very beginning should be a sign for what comes forward. Here we have the very, very first time that a carbon is going to be offered for Hashem in order to be mechaper on the diminishment of the moon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world that was not perfect. On purpose. Hashem purposely created a world that was lacking. Hashem said the moon should be diminished, there should be some hester upon him in this world. Here we're coming to a point in time when the world is about to achieve perfection, to be restored to a state of perfection. That requires that a carbon chatas be offered on Rosh Chodesh, and the way the world will be fully perfected is a very deep mystical thing, which I don't understand what I'm saying, just saying words, is the carbon chatas of Rosh Chodesh will be offered for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the kohanim will eat the meat, and when the kohanim eat the meat, this brings the full complement of kapara, and then everything is fine and good. And if you don't get it right the first time, there's really no way you can possibly repair the damage. You only get one chance to make a first impression. And Moshe Rabbeinu arrives on the scene, and he sees that the very first carbon chatas for Rosh Chodesh, the carbon, the only carbon which we offer to bring atonement for Hashem, which on a much deeper level means to bring the world to a state of perfection that was meant to be from the time of Maaseh Bereishis, now is the opportunity we have here right now, and in order for that to be achieved fully, we only have one chance to make a first impression, to do it right the very first time, Simani Milsa, and it requires that the Kohanim are going to eat from the meat. How can you blow it? How can the children of Aaron make a mistake and not eat from this meat? By not eating from the meat of the carbon chatas of Rosh Chodesh, there is something lacking in the full degree of kapara of the ochlu oisam asher kupar bohem. Hashem kaviyochel is not going to get kapara 100%. Hashem is not going to get kapara 100%. The world is not going to be restored to the perfection that it was meant to achieve at the time of Maaseh Bereishis. This is why Moshe Rabbeinu was so frustrated. The Eseir HaChatos Doroish Darash Moshe. It's the center of the Torah. This is something, the purpose of the Torah is to perfect us. It's to bring the world to perfection. And here, this we have failed. This very matter, there was a degree of failure. Now, what is... What?
So what's Aharon's answer?
So the answer is, it wasn't meant to be. We were right. There's a difference between Kodshei Shoh and Kodshei Doros, and the technical requirements are that we're not allowed to eat it. In a Chanami Moshe Rabbeinu, it wasn't meant to be.
Or it could be we'll make it up next month.
No, you can't, like I said, because that's the point. You only get the one chance to make a first impression. Every month, what?
So why do we do it every month?
Because we have to. There are different levels of kapara. But the ultimate level is the very first. That's why on Rosh Hashanah, I gave an example, in Rosh Hashanah, we're obsessed. Rosh Hashanah, you got to do it right. The first day Rosh Hashanah, that's the reason why, in fact, we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. Why there are 2 days Rosh Hashanah? Because sometimes the witnesses come late. If they come late, then the Levim sing the wrong Shira. So, big deal, they sang the wrong Shira. It never happened to you that by mistake you said the wrong Shira. You said the wrong Shira in the morning. You said the wrong... The Hayoim Yoim Rishon B'Shabbos. Never happened to you once in your life that by mistake you said the Thursday Shira instead of Wednesday Shira or vice versa. You turned to the wrong page, you weren't paying attention. So what's the big deal? Well, on Rosh Hashanah it's a very big deal. Because when it's the beginning of the year, on the very first day of the year, when the Shemayim is open, you don't want to make any mistakes. You make a mistake on the first day of the year, that's not a very good sign. In order to prevent there being a possibility of making a mistake on the very first day of the year, Chazal decided it was better that we should perpetually have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. Because by having 2 days Rosh Hashanah, you avoid the possibility you're going to make such a mistake like this. That's how far it goes. The Simoni Milsa, you got to do it right the very first time. This is an idea. There was an opportunity here on the very first Rosh Chodesh to bring a kapara for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is symbolic of trying to bring the world back to a state of perfection. To bring the world to a state that was meant to be at the time of Maaseh Bereishis, when Hashem said to the moon, there should be Shnei HaMa'oros HaGedoilim. You can coexist. The moon went and the moon said, you know, Ein Shnei Malachim Meshamashim Mekesar Echad. Hashem said, you're right, the world is not a perfect place, so we're going to have to make you be Luchim Maiti Es Atzmech. By bringing Hashem, ultimately said, that was a mistake. I should not have done that. Let's reverse it. The way we're going to reverse it, to some degree, is through the bringing of a carbon chatas for HaKadosh Baruch. Okay, these are very just words. I'm throwing out words over here. By Hashem says, bring a carbon on my behalf. I need to do tshuva for the mistake of being the Maid the Yereach. So by bringing this carbon, we are going back and, so to speak, restoring the moon to its original state. When does the moon and the sun realign? The moon and the sun are realigned with the number 19. Every 19 years is the time when Hashem was Memayit the Yoreach, there's discrepancy. The lunar calendar and the solar calendar are not the same. They're operating on two different wavelengths, the two different worlds. When do the two once again come back together, we can have a relationship where they're equals? It takes 19 years to achieve that that unity. A 19-year cycle is when your Hebrew birthday and your English birthday are exactly the same. So even though it's true the moon indeed has been diminished, but there's still hope. There's still the moon can be realigned with the sun over a 19-year period of time when we have leap years every 2-3 years, and ultimately they all catch up over 19 years. The central theme of this parsha is the Miluim. The tragedy that happened on the Miluim, the day of the inauguration of the Mishkan, was the death of Nadav Ahavihu. That triggered a sequence of events. The Elazar and Isamar were oinanim. They were not able to eat the first carbon chatos of Rosh Chodesh. They were not able to give a kapara to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for being memayit the Areach. The meat of the Areach is where everything went off, when everything went off battle. I'm just saying something which possibly, this, I just want to bring out these ideas, and just to bring out these ideas, I just find it very interesting, very curious, is that Rashi begins this parsha with three numbers. The three numbers are 8, 1, 10. That's the opening Rashi. Today is the eighth day. It's the first day of the year. And it is the day which received 10 crowns. 19. Why is Rashi telling us numbers suddenly in the beginning of the parasha? Because that's the essence of what is happening here in this parasha. In this parasha, V'yisir ha-chatos doroish dorash moesha. Halavai, it should have been where everything came together. We would have brought a carbon chatos for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kohanim would have eaten it. V'ochlu oisam asher kupar bohem. Melamed she'akohanim oisam. Hashem would have had the satisfaction that he would have atonement for this meat of the Areach, which to some degree means there would have been harmony once again in the world as it was at the time when Hashem created the world, and that would have brought for us an entirely different world in ways that we do not appreciate. Okay.
I still have to ask a question. I don't understand. The sequence of events is followed. Moshe has a problem with Aharon. Moshe asks him, what did you do? And he explains it to him.
And Moshe and says,
Rashi is saying what Rabbi Levi accepted is correct.
No, Moshe said to him, we look at Rashi. Rashi says, Rashi is only a partial Rashi. Moshe admitted that Yitav be'enav hoda v'loy bush. He was not embarrassed to say, what was he not embarrassed? Rashi doesn't say the entire expression from the Gemara. V'loy bush loy mar shachachti elo. V'loy bush loy mar loy shamati. Elo omar shamati v'shachachti. Moshe admitted that Hashem himself told him there's a difference between Kodshei Shah and Kodshei Doros, but Moshe admitted that he indeed forgot. We'll come to that in a few moments. I'm going to get to that in a few moments. What? Aaron was right. No, there wasn't, because the bottom line was they did not eat it. The fact is, you cannot, just because you're right doesn't mean you have achieved the mission. Just because you're right, you had to abort the mission. You were right for aborting the mission. But the bottom line is, the Kohanim did not eat from the carbon chatos. Elazar v'Isamar took the chatos of Rosh Chodesh and they burnt it. They destroyed it because they were not allowed to eat it because they were oinanim and they were correct. They were correct. But the bottom line is, we lost out the first time there was an opportunity to be mechaper for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the chet of the Mir HaYareach. That opportunity was lost. And that has consequences in the spiritual world. Okay, let's go to a different...
Chava having gematria of 19.
Chava has the gematria of 19. I don't know. Okay, but it's interesting. 19, with the goal is to restore the relationship between the sun and the moon. Okay, let's go to a very different idea. This idea is very down to earth, very different than this mystical type of idea. If you ever did, I found this to be something. I came across something new this year. I didn't. We know that the middle of the Torah are the words Doroish Dorash. I came across a Chazal that says that there is a tradition that when a sefer writes in the Sefer Torah Doroish Dorash, he should be makbid to write the word Doroish, the first Doroish at the end of the line, and the second Dorash at the beginning of the line. And indeed, I looked in the Tikkun, and that's how it is. In the Tikkun, the one it's Doroish Dorash, the two words are repeated. The first Doroish is the end of the line, and the second is the beginning of the next line. And the way it's explained in the Sefer Yisro is because the Kubis Chazal explained this, is that when a person makes an, when a person learns, you learn something, Doroish, you learn a sugya. then it comes time to repeat, to review, to chazer, to do it a second time. Don't just do it superficially. You have to redo it the second time fresh. The second darash, even though in the past it was darosh, you already spent time learning Torah, you investigated, you thoroughly analyzed the sugya, and now it's later in your life and you want to redo it again, you have to do it on a new line. It has to be fresh. Writing the second darash on the beginning of a line is symbolic of reapplying yourself with everything you got to review the sugya all over again. I had a Rebbe in Tarvadas of Kahana, Sechasag Levracha. So he was a Rashi in Tarvadas for maybe even 50 years, many, many years he gave Shurim, and he gave Shurim over, he had a cycle of giving Shurim on certain Chalakim of Yoredeya over like 2-3 years. And he told us that he throws out his notes from the previous cycle. When he comes to give Shir, he starts fresh. Even though he's done this 50 times, whatever number of times, there's no hana in giving the shiurim unless he goes to give the shiurim as if he never looked at the shiurim before. The second darash has to begin on a new line. That is what Chazal say, Darosh Darash Maisha. I was thinking a different idea, something might be a little bit off. But the only reason why I'm saying this is because of experience. If you ever did editing in any type of writing, whether it's Hebrew or English, there's a very common pitfall. The computer today picks this up, but not always. It depends if you're actually using a spell checker or not. If there's repeated words, it's not uncommon that when you type and you edit your thoughts, you repeat words twice. And today, with all of the technology, they'll right away indicate a red line, the word has been repeated twice. But if you don't have an editor, so hopefully you have a copy editor, or as you edit your own material, you will take note that you repeated the word twice. Sometimes you read something 100 times. You literally read something 100 times, and then you'll send it out to print, and it'll appear in a newspaper, it'll appear in a book, in a journal, and there you're reading it, and there are two words right next to each other. The word is repeated twice. Repetition. And you ask yourself, how in the world could have this possibly happened? I edited this 100 times, two words, same exact word, next to each other, impossible. You go back to your original documents and you discover the answer. You know why you made the mistake? Because one word appeared at the end of the line and the second word appeared in the beginning of the next line. And when it was submitted for publication, it was reformatted, and in the new format the two words were in the middle of the line. So there you see the glaring error, you see the two words there right next to each other. This is very, very common. It's very common when you read a newspaper, you'll see two words, even a newspaper, New York Times, you'll see two words next to each other, and sometimes you'll see at the end of the line, begin the line, this happens. This is very common. It's interesting that the Torah here demands the Esir HaChatos, according to Chazal, the tradition is Doroish Darash, to do it exactly like this. Why? What is the moral message? What is Moshe Rabbeinu over here doing? He's launching an investigation. We've appointed a committee to check into your emails, check into Watergate, to Bridgegate, to check into Iran-Contra affair, whatever it is, whatever you want to do. Moshe Rabbeinu is launching an investigation. Doroish Dorash Moshe. Someone is going to be accountable for a Chorban that has taken place. Today is the first day of the base of the Mishkan. Everything that happens is critical, and a terrible mistake has been made. The Seir HaChatos has been burnt, has been destroyed. Who is responsible for this error, for this tragedy? Doroish Darash. The Torah is giving us Musar. When you make an investigation, don't embarrass anyone. Still a hate. You do it in a way where it's not noticeable that you're looking to blame and to find the error. The way the words Doroish Darash are to be presented on the column in the Sefer Torah is one word at the end of the line, Lamed, one word at the beginning of the Lamed, because to the average person, they'll never catch them. They'll never catch the mistake. They'll never see it. And here, that means the average person is not even aware that there is an investigation taking place. It may very well be that the person is innocent. He did absolutely nothing wrong. So why should we go and embarrass him and hold him accountable? People are only going to remember the investigation. They're not going to remember if he was innocent or guilty. They're not going to care, right? There's always going to be this collateral damage. The Musar Haskil of the Torah is, when you have to go launch an investigation, Darosh Darash, do it in a way where you preserve the dignity of the parties that are involved. One word at the end, one word at the beginning. There is much less of a chance in such situations someone's going to take note that there is indeed a Darosh Darash taking place. Okay. Now let's go again to continue with the theme of Darosh Darash. Moshe Rabbeinu, he responds with after he was told, Mr. Rapport, coming back to your question, after Moshe Rabbeinu was told, given the answer as to why the Seir HaChatos was burnt and the other two Seirim were consumed, so he was told, the answer was there was a difference between Kodshei Shah and Kodshei Doiros, that the other two Seirim were Karbonos that are going to be offered today, and that's it. Once in history. Once in history, HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe the Aaron, there's a dispensation, even if the Kohanim are in a state of mourning, they are allowed to eat the Karbonos. But for the Karbon Chatos of the Rosh Chodesh, which will be offered every month, so that there is no dispensation, you can bring it in a state of Aninus, Tumo Hutra B'tzibur, Tumo Dechuyi B'tzibur, but that's only for the Hakrava, not for the actual eating. So the key words are, there's a difference between Kodshei Shah and Kodshei Doiros. This was brought to the attention of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu responds with a very, very, very curious expression. Vayishma Moshe, vayitav be'enav. Right, what are the words? Let me just make sure I'm saying the right words. Vayishma. Vayishma Moshe, vayitav. Why did the Torah use the word vayitav be'enav? What is the significance of these words?
Before Chamishi.
Before Shishi, Vayishma Moshe Vayitav Be'enav. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, Vayitav Be'enav Hoidev Loi Bush. Loimar Loi Shamati. He admitted. Why does the Torah use the word Vayitav? So I was just thinking that the word Vayitav is a very powerful word in connection to Moshe Rabbeinu. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, what was the term that the Torah used to describe his birth? Vayar oso ki tofu. They saw it. And the Chazal tell us either it means one of two things, nismale kol habayis oira, or he was noilad mohu. But the reaction that was given was ki tofu. Now let's take a look at the setting of Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu was born in a very difficult tkufa. He was born only through the encouragement of his sister Miriam. Amram, Moshe's father, was poyresh from Yocheved. Amram said, times have called for us to separate ourselves from our wives. They're throwing all of the male children into the Nile. So therefore, it's not in our best interest to have children. Everyone should follow in my lead and should be poyresh from his wife. Yocheved, Miriam, gets up and says to her father, Father, you're worse than Parah. Parah was only Gozer al ha-Zecharim, and you're Gozer al ha-Zecharim v'yal ha-Nekevos. So, indeed, Amram listened to the advice of his daughter, and Miriam, and he remarried Yocheved, and Vatar Vatelet, Vayelech Ish Mibeislev, Vikaches Paslev, Vatar Vatelet, and lo and behold, Moshe Rabbeinu was born. What was Amram thinking and what was Miriam thinking? So when you look at it from the big picture of things, is the Machloikis was a Machloikis Kodshei Shah and Kodshei Doiros. Amram said, at this moment in time, the Shah, we are in a very deep state of hester panim. We are in galus. And the times, the shah, the moment of the time demands we have to cease and desist. We have to stay away. Miriam had the insight to say, don't look at the shah. Look at the doiros. What are you doing? Paro, there are many paros in history. They come and go. You have to do, you have to look to the future. You're worse. Paro is only here for this generation, for the males. Have Nikevos. You don't know. You don't know what's going to be in the future. The essence of her argument is, don't focus on the Shah. Focus on the Doris. And when Moshe Rabbeinu was born against this backdrop, how was he described? Vayar oisoy ki toifu. Moshe Rabbeinu was a product of not of differentiating between Kodshei Shah and Doros. So perhaps there is some remez, there is some significance, is that when Aaron says to Moshe, Moshe, you're making a mistake, there's a chilik between Kodshei Shah, Kodshei Doros. And Moshe says, Vayitav Be'enov, it's not just an accident that the word Vayitav Be'enov is being used. Vayitav Be'enov is going back to Moshe's whole essence. Moshe's essence was a product of a chilik between Kodshei Shav and Kodshei Doros. Moshe says, you're right, you've touched a chord. You're right, you're absolutely correct. There is a difference between Shav and Doros. Now, what did Moshe, let's just take a little bit step further, just add a little bit more to this. What did Moshe Rabbeinu say to what does Rashi say? Rashi's quoting a Medrash, and Moshe said, Loi Bush. Moshe was not embarrassed to admit. He did not say, he was not embarrassed to say, Loi Shomati, Elo Omar, Shomati Vishachachti. I heard Hashem say this, and I forgot. And there's a lot of discussion of what is the significance of Moshe Rabbeinu saying Vishachachti. We find in the Gemara in Yerushalmi, that asks, what is it, what's worse? Is it worse to say, I forgot, or is it worse to say, I never heard? And the Yerushalmi there seems to say, it's worse to say, I never heard. So when you tell a person, I heard and you forgot, you're minimizing your embarrassment. So the Mepharshim say that may have been true for the people in the time of the Gemara, because they had the opportunity to hear everything. But for Moshe Rabbeinu to say, I heard and I forgot, on his level it was more embarrassing to say, I forgot. That's a different story. But Moshe Rabbeinu, more than he said, Shamati v'shachach. They want to say a drush. Doesn't mean that Moshe says, I heard and I accidentally forgot. Moshe Rabbeinu is not the ordinary person. Moshe Rabbeinu does not forget. There's no such thing by Moshe Rabbeinu as forgetting. What it means is Moshe Rabbeinu said, I chose to forget. What does it mean, I chose to forget? Where did Shicha come to this world? It's a very famous medrash. The difference between the first set of luchos and the second set of luchos. During the time of the first set of luchos, there was no such thing as Shicha, as forgetting. When you study Torah, it automatically was absorbed in your mind and it was impossible for it to be forgotten. When Moshe Rabbeinu shattered the luchos, he brought into this world Shicha. He brought into this world the koyach of forgetting. And when Moshe Rabbeinu then went to the effort of giving us, to asking Hashem to give us a second set of luchos, it's not the same. We all know that when we learn Torah, we forget. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he broke the luchos, he made a decision that there should be something called forgetting. Moshe's decision of shattering the luchos was where Moshe decided that there's no difference between the Shah and Doiris. Look what's happening here. Moshe's coming down from Shemayim. At this moment, Vayar Eso Egel V'yasa Mecholos, he sees there's an Egel, there's a Mecholos, and Moshe has in his hands the Luchos. The Luchos is the Nitzchis of Klal Yisrael. It's the future of Klal Yisrael. It's all generations. What they're doing right now is Lefi Shah. Moshe Rabbeinu can take the luchos if he so wish, can put them aside, can bring them back to Shemayim temporarily, and he will go and he will deal with the situation, whatever needs to be done, lefi shah, and then if things are okay, we can proceed and we can bring down the second set. We can bring down the luchos again. Moshe Rabbeinu decided, if there is no shah, then there's no future. Moshe Rabbeinu here acted in the opposite fashion of what Aaron and Elazar v'Samar, and what his name, what Miriam. Miriam said there is a difference between Shoah and Doiris. Amram, don't look at the moment, you have to look to the future of Klal Yisrael. Don't give up. Aaron said to Moshe, there's a difference between Shah and Doros. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Shemayim with the Luchos, Moshe chose not to make that distinction. Moshe took the Luchos, which the Luchos is the future of Klal Yisrael, and he destroyed it. Why? Because if there is no Shah, there is no Doros. The two are interlinked. If Klal Yisrael, at this Madrega, is sitting here and making an egel, they're dancing with an egel, and at this moment there is no Shah, there is no Klal Yisrael, there is no Torah, there will be no future period, and the Luchos are going to be shattered. Moshe made a decision that there is no chilik between the two. And in fact, this is his ultimate praise. Ulechol, the last pasuk of the Torah, the hesped of Moshe Rabbeinu is, Ulechol hayod hachazaka, Ulechol hamor hagadol, asher osa Moshe le'enei kol Yisrael. What does it mean, le'enei kol Yisrael? Zu shviris haluchos. The essence of Moshe Rabbeinu is not to make this distinction. Not to make, lo bo shloma, Moshe wasn't embarrassed to say, shloi shamati. Moshe Shamati, I'm well aware that there's a chilik between Shah and Doros. My DNA, the essence of my DNA is Vayaroi so kitoifu. This was a good show. This was a good decision that was made by Miriam. Miriam influenced her father. This taka chilik between Shah and Doros. Shamati, I'm well aware, but I chose Shamati v'shachachti al derech Jewish. I chose to forget this concept. My essence was to destroy the Luchos, to show that if there is no Shah, then there is no Doros. They're totally zeh b'zeh. Aaron, now what the answer is that, you know, there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance. There are times in our history when, in a Hanami, if there's no Shah, there's no Doros, absolutely. But you have to understand, there are times when there is a Chiluk. Nothing to the extreme is good. Moshe Rabbeinu's essence was, there is a Chiluk, Shah l'Doros. Moshe's greatest accomplishment was, Ulechol hayot hachazaka le'enei kol Yisrael is, there is no Chiluk. And here, in the middle of the Torah, in the middle of the Torah, Dorosh Dorash Moshe, is where we find the struggle of Moshe Rabbeinu versus Aaron. What's the proper role at this moment in time? Is there a chilik between Shah and Doros? Is there not a chilik? This is the balance, the balancing act between Moshe and the Aaron. Okay, let's go to another idea. Again. Okay, let's go to another short idea. We have here in this week's parasha the offering of a mincha. In the beginning of the second aliyah, it says, Vayakreit es ha-mincha, Vayimalei chapo mimen. Now we are brainwashed all over. Whenever we discuss the mincha, the way the mincha is described is with the term kimitza. The kohen takes three fingers, he takes his entire palm, and he puts his palm upon the flower, and he digs three fingers into the flour. That's called a kemitza. A kemitza literally means a small amount. And Chazal, when they interpret, they explain that Hashem only wants from you a small amount. Hashem does not want you to give everything that you have to Him. Hashem just wants you to give a token, small token gift to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And throughout Chumash, every time we describe the giving of a Karban Mincha, it's always described with the word kemitza, which means a small amount. Here is the exception. The parsha of the Miluim, of the Chanukah Samishkan, when they offered the very first mincha, the way it's described is Vayakir Samincha, Vayimalei Chapo Mimena. They filled up their hand from it. Rashi is disturbed. What is this expression? We never had this expression before, that they filled up their hand with the mincha. Rashi, Pasuk Yud Zayin says, He Kemitza. This is the Kemitza. What is the message? And this difference is, all of the psukim in the beginning of Ayikra that tell us that you bring a kemitza is all part of the instructions. Hashem is telling you what exactly to do. Here we're dealing with lamaisa, what they did. And the difference is an attitude. Hashem says to us, what you give me, I only want you to give me a small amount. But that does not mean that our attitude of giving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be, here Hashem, I'll throw you a dime. I'll give you a quarter. I'll give you a nickel. Leave me alone. You want from us something? You only want from us a kemitza, so here's your quarter. That's chas shalom. That's a tragic thing to say. The pasuk here is very clear that when we actually went ahead and brought the very first mincha, the way it was offered was the small teeny amount that fit in the palm of your hand. From our perspective, from the perspective of Aaron and his children, it was vayimale chapoy mimena. Your hands were filled. Your hands were mole. We're giving you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything we can possibly give. The balance between reading the pasuk the way it's described and when it's actually given, and the way the instructions are, Hashem only wants from us a small amount. But when we give that small amount, we have to give it with a full heart, as if we're giving HaKadosh Baruch Hu everything we can possibly give. That same kmitza here is described with the word vayimale chapoy mimen, with a full head. Okay, let's go to another idea. The middle of the Torah, we mentioned last week we had the middle of the Torah for psukim. And this week we have the middle of the Torah for words and for letters. We already discussed the Rosh Darash, but we also have the middle of the Torah for letters, and that is the Vav Degachin. One of the Shiratzim is the... Which one of the Shiratzim? One the is it the Nachash? The vav, kol cholech al gochon. Any creature, any sheretz that crawls on its belly is tamei and may not be eaten. When the Torah describes, says the word gochon, that goes on its belly, there's a large vav. That large vav, according to Chazal, is the center of the Torah. Now we know if we count all the letters, it's not the center. So there are many different interpretations. One of the interpretations is that there are oisios mishunos. In the Torah, there are large letters and there are small letters. There's a very big base in the beginning of the Torah. There is throughout the Torah, I think there are 18. Were there are 18 letters? There are 18, 17 large letters. Wow, you remember? This is the middle of the oisios mishunos. There are 17 oisios mishunos. Vav deGochon is the center. What is the significance of Vav deGochon representing the center of the Torah? The center represents the most intense. The intensity of what the Torah is all about. The word gochoin is a code word for churban, the churban of not listening to Hashem. This world, unfortunately, is a cursed world because of the very first chet, the chet of Adam Harishain, which started with the Nachash. The Nachash was the Adam Mikol HaChayos, the most devious of all of the creatures, and the Nachash succeeded in persuading Chava and Adam to be Nichshol, and that brought a whole series of curses to this world. The creature that brought about this, the curse to the world, was also cursed. Of course, it's the source of all curse. What was the curse? The curse was it lost its legs. Chazal tell us that the Nachash, before the Chet of the Eitz Hadas, had legs. It walked with legs, and there's even scientific research that they even see there's some truth to that, and now al gechoincha teilech, the curse is you from now on will crawl on your belly. Vav is symbolic of the word a hook. The most significant vav in the Torah is the word the vavei hoamudim. The Mishkan was protected, was shielded with curtains, with pillars, and these pillars had curtains, and the curtains were suspended by these hooks. What is the Mishkan? There is no greater accomplishment in this world than the building of the Mishkan. That's what the theme of this parasha is all about. Vayihi b'yom hashmini, this day when the Mishkan was erected for good, took 10 crowns. This was the crown jewel of creation. To build in this mundane world a mokoim for Hashem to be mitzamtzem his kedusha. Dira batachtoinim. The dira batachtoinim is enclosed in the Mishkan, in this mokoim. The vavei hoamudim are the hooks which keep up which begin the tzimtzum. There are many levels of tzimtzum. There's the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then there is the entire Hechel, and then there is the Chotzer, and then there is the Azara, and then there is the Chotzer. The curtains is the beginning of the tzimtzum of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina. And those hooks, those vavim, those hooks encompass, they enclose HaKadosh Baruch Hu. we have here the two extremes of the Torah. The Torah warns us, if you don't follow in Hashem's ways, there will be accountability, there will be punishment. The greatest proof of punishment is the Nachash. The Nachash is the source of Churban in this world, the source, the Eitz Hadas, and the punishment, the curse of the Nachash is Al Gechoincha Telech. In that word, Gechoincha Telech is captured in the essence of the Churban of not doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem will distance himself, will completely obliterate this world. This will be nothing more than a curse. The greatest accomplishment of Kedusha that you can achieve in this world is to bring Hashem Shechina down into this world, to create for HaKadosh Baruch Hu a Mokoim for His Shechina. To have the Vavei HaMudim, the hooks, the Vav of the pillars, which serve as a beginning of a Tzimtzum of Hashem Shechina. And what is the center of the Torah? Chazal tell us, if you want to find the penimius of the Torah, the makom, the merkas, that center point where you mitzamsim the intensity of what Torah is all about, it's the vavei, the vav de gochain, where these two things intersect. The vav of gochain. Because the vav of gochain represent the extremes of this world. This is what the Torah is putting in front of you. V'esachayim v'esamoves nasati lefonecha uvacharta b'chayim. The vav de gochain is the chayim v'hamoves. The gochain is the moves, the vav is the chayim. Here is where they intersect. The stakes could not be higher. Uvacharta b'chayim. This is the pnimius, the shorish, the most intense part of the Torah. Okay, let's go to another quick idea. We have here a tragedy of the death of Nadav Avihu. After the death of Avihu, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Aaron and his children, "Do not leave the Mishkan. You should continue to doing the Avodah on the inauguration of the Mishkan. And as far as your children, do not worry. V'acheichem b'nei Yisrael yivgu es hasreif asher soraf Hashem. Klal Yisrael will mourn for the loss of the children, of your two children. You stay in the Beis HaMikdash, v'acheichem b'nei Yisrael yivgu es hasreif asher soraf Hashem. And indeed, we have a minog, there is a tradition, that every single year on Yom Kippur, it is the minog, it is a requirement that a person should try to cry over the death of Nadav Avihu. And if a person cries over the death of Nadav Avihu, is muftach, he will never chas v'shalom suffer such a tragedy in his lifetime. The question is why?
Why Yom Kippur?
Because Yom Kippur? Why Yom Kippur? I don't know the answer. I don't know. At least one day a year. It was the day when they were brought into the Avoida. And Yom Kippur is the day when Aaron, it's his day. It's the day of the Avodah of the Kohanim on Yom Kippur. Question is, even Moshe Rabbeinu, it says about him, Vayitmu Yimei Bichi Evel Moshe. Mourning comes to an end. Hashem does not want a person to mourn excessively. Moshe died. After he died, 30 days passed, and that's it. So why is it that Nadav Avihu, their death brought about upon Klal Yisrael a requirement to mourn forever? Forever. My high, what is this all about? So the truth is there are many answers. One of the most common answers is Moshe Rabbeinu, he lived a full life. Moshe lived to 120 years old, so what more could you possibly want? So for such a person, but a child, the loss of potential, for that there is no end to the mourning. The mourning goes on forever and ever. That's a very popular answer to answer this question. But I think there's another answer. There's another answer, and that is, if a person does what he's supposed to do at the right time, when you achieve what is required of you at the moment, you're done. There's no need to deepen the mourning or to dwell upon it. But if a person does not seize the moment and do what's required of him at that time, there's no repair that can ever be done for what is demanded of you. Moshe Rabbeinu died. He died, Zayin Adar. So Klal Yisrael, they mourned for him right away. The halacha requires that when the Gadol Hador dies, so you do certain things. So they did certain things. They did what they were supposed to do. They cried, they mourned, they eulogized for 30 days. Vayitmu yimei v'chi evil Moshe. Nadav ve'aviyu were the greatest of the greats. Chazal tell us they were even greater than Moshe v'Aaron. But Moshe the Aaron and all the people that were the whole Klal Yisrael were not allowed to mourn for Nadav v'Aviv on the day that they died, because the day that they died was the first day of the Mishkan. They were not allowed to die. They were not allowed to mourn. The rule, the requirements of the day were such that there can be no mourning for these two great people on this day. It was delayed. It was delayed until after the Milum, after the Chanukah, Hamishkan. So how long did it take? They had 12 days, then they sinned every single day they were Korbanos, and then it was Pesach. So the first time they had a chance to mourn, to properly mourn for Nadav Aviv, was probably in the beginning of Chodesh Iyar. If you're not able, even though there is a good reason, you're not able to do what's demanded of you B'shaitoy at that time, there's no way to repair the damage. When tzaddikim leave this world, there's something that has to be done. If it's not going to be done, okay, we'll make it up later on. You can't. You'll have to spend your entire existence, your entire life, trying to make up what could have been accomplished in a moment at the right time. Here, Klal Yisrael, they're not responsible because their death happened at the time of the Chanukah Samishkan, so they cannot properly mourn at this moment in time. They had but the consequence was for future, for all generations. The Musar Haskel is everything in life is just like this. Every time in life, there are always situations, there are always opportunities, and if you take advantage of the opportunity, you could accomplish at that moment in time, in a few moments, what is necessary. But if you squander the opportunity and leave it for another day, you'll have to spend the rest of your life trying to make up for the few moments of what you missed and you could have accomplished in a few moments. You mamash see that here with Nadav Aviv. Nadav Aviv died. There is no, the mourning goes on forever and ever. You know why? Because B'shas Maisa, when they died, they were not allowed to mourn. They had to put off the mourning all the way until 30 days from now, until Chodesh Iyar. You're going to put it off until Chodesh Iyar? And then we're going to try to go look back and recognize the loss that we've suffered with the death of Nadav Aviv. So you know what? You know how long you're going to have to mourn for this? It's not going to have to be forever. And certainly when it comes to good, certainly when it comes to good, it's the same thing. Okay, quick halacha, interesting halacha we have over here, the mitzvah of Shesuya Yayin. Moshe, Aaron was taught the mitzvah that you're not allowed to enter into the Beis Hamikdash in the state of intoxication. And this was taught to Aaron. Now, why did Nadav Aviv die? So Rashi, the Medrash tells, I think, 7-8 reasons as to why Nadav Aviv died when they entered the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And Rashi only gives us two. Number one, they were Hoyer Halacha Bifnei Rabbi. They passed in Halacha in the presence of their Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu. And number two, they were Shesuye Yayin. And someone has said the reason why Rashi only gave two of the eight reasons is because it says lo with a mercha chifula asher loy the mark of an esh zara asher loy tziva oisam. Underneath the word lo is a rare ta'anim, one of the rare ta'anim, a very unique trap, which means a mercha chifula, which means a double. It means there were two, lo is referring double, there were two primary reasons what they did. They drank wine, and Rashi holds these are the two primary reasons. They drank wine and they were mar alacha b'fnei rabba. So the Mefarshim explain that the two are related. When a person drinks wine, he becomes loose. And when you become loose, you lose your stature, you lose your chashivas for Talmidei Chachamim, and you decide, I can also decide a halachic ruling. So the reason that Rashi gives based upon the Merchol Kefula are related to one another. By drinking wine, you lose your sense of Moira for your elders, and you can come to Moira Halacha Bifnei Rabba. So before I want to explain, that is why there's the Minig Yisrael to say, we make Kiddush Savri. Savrei, you always ask Rishus. Mm-hmm. Why do you ask Rishus before you drink a cup of wine? Now that I'm drinking a cup of wine, I'm putting myself into a state of intoxication. There's a very strong likelihood I'm not going to have respect for the people sitting around the table. So you right away gird yourself, and you right away are mechazik yourself. I'm asking Rishus. I want to let it be known, not only to you, but to myself. Who's in charge here? You are in charge, not me. I'm just a guest. Now, with that in mind, that will serve as a chizik, not to chas shall be nichshol in coming to the mer halacha b'fnei rabba. Okay, another var, another quick var is we have over here the all the non-kosher animals in the parasha. Among them, we have 24 birds. There are 24 birds which are not kosher. The Gemara Masech Tehillim says, among the 24 birds, there are 4 simonim. What are the 4 simonim? In order for a bird to be kosher, it has to have one of 4 simonim. What are the 4 simonim? An extra toe. It has a zepek, it has a crop. The kurkavo, the gizzard, can be peeled. Kurkavo niklaf. And the 4th simon is that it's not a predator. So again, it has to have an extra finger. Extra finger. Number 2, it has to have a crop. The kurkavon, the gizzard has to be peeled, has to have the ability to be peeled, and has to not be a predator. Doris. Now there are 24 birds listed in this week's parasha. Among the 24, the Gemara Mechulin says 20 of them have 3 of the kosher simonim. Even though they have 3 of the kosher simonim, the Torah still says they're not kosher. Torah says that even though the 3 good things going for it, they're still not kosher. 2 of the birds have 2 simonim, and there's 1 bird that has 1 kosher sign, and there's 1 bird that has no kosher simonim at all. And which bird is that? That is the Nesher. The Nesher is the worst of them all. The other birds, they have something good going for it. Even though they have something good going for it, the Torah still says they're not kosher. But the Nesher has absolutely nothing good going for it. It doesn't have an extra finger. It doesn't have a crop. Its gizzard is not peeled. It is a predator. It has nothing good going for it. And that's why indeed the Torah says this is a non-kosher bird. Okay. Now, another point. There's a medrash. All of the Mepharshim quote this medrash when it comes to being mara halacha bifnei rabo. The medrash said compares klal yishol to a bird. Just like a bird needs wings, it depends upon its wings. Its wings. So too klal yishol depend upon its elders. Being mara halacha bifnei rabo is compared to taking a bird and cutting off its wings. If you cut off the wings of a bird, the bird dies. The bird cannot live. That's what it says in the Medrash. The wings of a bird are its life. The wings of a bird are compared to the zikanim of Klal Yisrael. Just like a bird needs its wings to survive, Klal Yisrael needs its elders to survive. When a person is being moira halacha bifnei rabo, the Medrash says it's like taking a bird and cutting off its wings. Therefore, you can't live. Nada v'aviu, they were moira halacha bifnei rabo. Therefore, it's only natural they cannot live. You cannot live in such a situation. Point I want to make, I want to combine these 2 things together. We have a very famous pasuk in Chumash Dvarim. I think it's in Parshas Ekev. Vo'ese eschem al kanfei nisharim vo'ovi eschem eloi. The way the Geula Ha'asid is described is that Kadosh Baruch will carry us al kanfei nisharim. Ke kanfei nisharim. The mystery is, from all the birds that are available out there to pick, did the Torah have to pick the one bird that has absolutely no kosher simonim? We would expect that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to take us to Eretz Yisrael in times of Mashiach, Hashem would select the bird that has all 4 kosher simonim. And yet, the bird that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has selected is the bird that has absolutely no simonim whatsoever. The answer is, Hashem is taking us on the wings. It doesn't say Hashem is going to take us on the bird, on the tail, on the head, on the back. Vo'ese eschem al kanfei. You know, on a plane, planes are compared to birds. It's only, and everyone is making an analogy that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the Geula by taking us all on El Al, 747s. But that's not what it says, because even though a plane looks like a bird, you've never seen passengers fly on the wings. The passengers fly in the cabin, not on the wings. So this analogy that we're going to go, the Geula already is here, and we're going to Eretz Yisrael on passenger jets is not not 100% on the mark. The emphasis is on the wing. What Chazal are telling us, and this is a Chazal, I don't have the exact Chazal, is that in the time of Mashiach, when time of Gula has arrived, it may very well be, in Igvus of the Mashiach, we don't really have much going for us. It may very well be we don't have any simone kashrus. Unfortunately, we don't have anything. But there's one critical thing that we need. We need to go on the wings. The Chazal say, Moira halacha bifnei rabo is like cutting off the wings of a bird. If we, at least a makir, have pride in our legacy, in our tradition, in the zakenim, in our mesora, where we come from, that's all we need in the times of Mashiach. We can be like the Nesher. We can be like the creature that has no kosher simonim. But we need just to attach ourselves to the wings. Al-Kanfei Nisharim. These two are precise. It's an oxymoron. The wings are the Zakenim. You know, made an impression on me. Bernie Sanders. There was all this talk about him. You're hiding your Jewishness. You're claiming that you're a Polish immigrant. Polish immigrant. Almost every Orthodox Jew can say the same thing. You're a Polish immigrant. And then they put him under pressure. Okay, I'm not making any political speech over here. But he said, I saw the clip, and he said, I'm proud to be a Jew. Now, Bernie Sanders is a person that has absolutely no shaykhus to Yiddishkeit.
He's an Irish wife.
No shaykhus to Yiddishkeit whatsoever. He's intermarried to an Irish wife. No shaykhus, zero, zero. But millions... No, alright, so what is the motives were? Let's put that aside. But, you know, it's a remarkable thing. Millions of people see a person get up and say, I'm proud to be a Jew. I'm proud to be a Jew. Whatever his motives are, he said it with a lot of oomph, a lot of zest. It's impressive. That's what it means. Garnished. He has garnished. No simone kashrus. No shaychus to Yiddishkeit. But they are zakenim. I know where I come from. I know my legacy. I know my Mesoira. I'm proud to be a Jew. That's Vo'essa, the time of Geula is here. Vo'essa Eschem al Kanfei Neshem. Which is the Geula. Good Shabbos.